who followed an unlikely path to the White House. D'Arcy Charrington Neal, a gay Black man with a disability who has a unique understanding of how cookie-cutter masculinity prevents the full expression of men's humanity. And Nicolas Juarez, a Mexican-American with Tzotzil ancestry, who has firsthand experience of how little Indigenous men profit from a system built on outdated notions of masculinity that are aligned with white supremacy. This book cannot capture all of the complexities of the male experience, but these amuse-bouches are a start. Introduction. Why don't we say, boys will be boys, when a man wins the Nobel Peace Prize? Michael Kimmel. Although the news often focuses on the threats of terrorism, natural disasters, and nuclear war, there is no greater threat to humankind than our current definitions of masculinity. It's a bold statement. If you've never thought about it, it may even seem overblown. But before you put this book down, or stop this audio recording, take a moment to put a gender lens on men. In 10 years of both academic and media reporting on gender theory, I've long focused on the numerous consequences of the patriarchy for women, because there's no shortage of them. But when I started talking to men about their own gender, I was dumbfounded. It changed my entire outlook on feminism. I started to wonder why the lies that we tell about masculinity aren't on the first page of every newspaper every single day of the year. Psychologists have sounded the alarm. For the first time in its history, the American Psychological Association has created a set of explicit guidelines for practitioners who are treating men and boys. Their report warns therapists about the danger of what they call traditional masculinity ideology, negatively impacting men's mental health as well as physical health and well-being. Although the APA has often produced guidelines for therapists dealing with vulnerable populations like women, minorities, or LGBTQ people, they've identified that the falsehoods we've all absorbed about men are putting their own health at risk. And this is not just an American problem, it's an international crisis. In China recently, a new term has emerged, Zhunainhai, which translated from Mandarin means straight man cancer. In Iceland, it's eitruðkallmennska, which means toxic or poisonous masculinity. Hindi people in India refer to it as mardangi. In Quebec, where I'm from, we call the guy who defines himself through domination of men and women our macho. His polar opposite, the man who is in touch with his feelings, is referred to pejoratively as lemhos, which translates to the pink man. No matter what continent I visited and conducted interviews with men on, from Scandinavia to North America to sub-Saharan Africa, I heard the same things over and over again. Toxic masculinity is an epidemic that knows no borders, and no society has yet found the cure for it. It presents itself in subtle ways, such as the way that we raise boys differently from girls. It starts when we equate emotion with weakness and direct boys to display strength no matter what. It shows up in the way that we expect and encourage girls to show their true emotions while we demand that boys hide them from us. It reveals itself in the way that we're more comfortable with the image of a boy playing with a toy gun rather than a boy playing with a toy doll. Because we're more comfortable seeing a boy hold something that kills rather than something that cries. While we've spent a fair amount of time examining the negative effects of princesses and Barbies on the development of girls' perception of themselves, we haven't paused to question the consequences of the video games marketed to boys that have names like Manhunt, Thrill Kill, and Mortal Kombat. We don't blink twice when the NRA releases a free target shooting video game, 1 month after the Newtown Massacre, no less, and marks it as suitable for boys ages 4 and up. We indoctrinate boys, and it starts early.